Coming up, I sit down with Bram Cohen, the founder and CEO of Chia Network. It's all about crypto next on Triangulation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Triangulation episode 406, recorded Friday, July 12th, 2019. Bram Cohen, Chia Network. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/triangulation. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/triangulation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Triangulation. I'm Jason Howell. This is the show where I get the chance to sit down with people in the technology industry, often big names, people that have created technologies that you might even use on a daily basis. Joining me today, I'm super thrilled to welcome to the show Bram Cohen, founder, of course, and inventor of BitTorrent, but also, more recently, in the last couple of years, founder and CEO of Chia Network. How are you doing, Bram?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. I should point out this is not your first time on Triangulation.
Yeah, well, first time in a while.
Yeah, first time in a while. It was back in 2012, February 16th. Anyone who wants to kind of go back in time and see a little bit more about your background with BitTorrent can do that. It's Triangulation number 40, February 16th, 2012. You were on with Leo Laporte and Tom Merritt to talk all about BitTorrent, which was your big thing at that point in time. And of course, things have shifted a little bit for you in the last couple of years, and I'm sure you know your plans and preparation leading up to your shift into Chia started before that. But you know, we're here to talk, basically moving from one bit to another, essentially from BitTorrent to Bitcoin. What between the two kind of businesses, those two main technology businesses and efforts that you've spent. The last 15 years of your life working on, what would you say is the main, the like common thread between those things, the things that really get you excited between those two?
Well, the common thread is their network protocol stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm an engineer and that's my specialty. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're passionate about it.
Yeah.
And that's obvious with the work that you do. You have a brilliant mind for this stuff because, you know, sometimes people take a look at these things. We take it for granted, right? Mm-hmm. Something like BitTorrent or even Bitcoin. We were kind of talking about this earlier with crypto. It's easy to take these things for granted merely because as an everyday kind of net user, someone online that hears about these things, we don't understand the mechanics that go on behind the scenes to make these hyper complex systems actually operate. You're creating those systems to a certain degree. That takes a certain kind of mind.
Yeah. Oh, I love working on it. I love these like challenging problems with real like tangible results once you get something working.
Yeah.
And it's really a field which is young enough that you can come up with an idea. You can say, well, here's this analysis of how to think about this thing that really implies that this thing that hasn't done yet should be possible. And if I just do this engineering work, if I slog through all the work to get there, I'll really have something new. And that's what makes it so fabulous that you can really manage to pull that off.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, Chia, of course, last couple of years, we're going to talk all about the business itself and what you're hoping to do for crypto, and of course the green paper, or the white paper. What I know you're calling it a green paper that was released a couple of days ago. Has Chia been more or less challenging than creating and nurturing what you did with BitTorrent back in the day?
Chia is a much bigger piece of tech than BitTorrent. So BitTorrent, to get it up and running, took me, a year and a half working by myself. And Chia, we've been working on it for 2 years now with a whole team of people. And it's got a whole bunch of moving parts. And we have advisors who are pretty serious academic cryptographers who I've been working with. It's just a much bigger and more ambitious project in terms of what we're trying to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah, ambitious is definitely one great way to describe this. It really kind of seems to, in my view, stem from this idea that, you know, taking Bitcoin as one example, mm-hmm. Bitcoin has a large ecological mm-hmm. kind of toll on just mm-hmm. managing Bitcoin behind uh-huh. the scenes. And Chia seems to hope to address that a little bit. And, you know, it has kind of a green perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the goals of Chia is being much less wasteful, greener than Bitcoin is. That doesn't, in terms of Bitcoin's day-to-day functioning, mm-hmm. That doesn't cause a problem for Bitcoin's running. It's gross and it's bad for the world, but it doesn't make Bitcoin run badly. Although related to it is Bitcoin's whole point is that it's decentralized, mm-hmm. but it's not as decentralized as you'd really like it to be. So I came up with this whole grand plan for a new consensus algorithm that's much greener and more decentralized than the one in Bitcoin is.
And that's using space versus
So Bitcoin is based off this wonderful, horrible idea. Bitcoin is a secure distributed database. Now, that sounds like an oxymoron. How can you have a secure distributed database? Mm-hmm. How can it be that if everyone just leaves and totally new people come in, the database continues moving forward without interruption? Because don't you need like a quorum of people in order to keep doing things? And the idea in Bitcoin is that you have this blockchain that it requires actual computational work to create. So you have the technical term is dead beefs, but you have in order to make something that looks like a blockchain, there's work. The actual electricity, basically when you have a Bitcoin mining operation, all those computers burning all that electricity, they're not actually doing anything. Most of what they're doing accomplishes nothing. What they are doing is they're printing lottery tickets.
Right.
Once in a while, one of them prints a winning lottery ticket. Like once every couple of minutes somewhere on planet Earth, one of these machines prints a winning lottery ticket, and then everything moves forward. What this accomplishes is that if you and I are just reading this database and we get into an argument about what is the current state of the database, we can resolve this argument just by looking at the weight of our blockchains, and whichever one had more blood, sweat, and tears go into its creation is the winner. And this allows for very rapid, very reliable consensus on what the current state of this database is. And this is a really amazing idea. It really accomplishes this seemingly impossible task of making a secure distributed database. Now, it has a replication strategy of everything goes everywhere. It's in order to make it possible to keep up, it has this limit of only really handling a few transactions per second.
Right.
And you have warehouses full of computers burning electricity doing nothing. but that those caveats aside, it's really accomplishing something amazing. Yeah. And it's hard to figure out how to improve on this. And people go, well, we'll just use a different mining algorithm, just a different way of printing lottery tickets. But those all kind of wind up being the same. When you mess with it, what winds up happening is the way you mine Bitcoin, the way you mine any cryptocurrency that's truly distributed, that really does have a blockchain, that boils down to you manufacture custom hardware for doing your mining, and then you burn electricity with that custom hardware to do your mining. And that's what it all boils down to. And you can, if you're really clever, you can mess with the balance between the electricity and the cost of the hardware. You can make the costs of doing the design and fabrication of the hardware more or less. And usually people try and make it more, and that turns out to be a bad idea, because that's also a source of centralization. You don't want it to be that someone who spends a ridiculous budget on designing better hardware now has much better hardware than anybody else, and if anyone else wants to compete, they have to sink so much money into it, no one's going to do it, and then you only have one vendor of the hardware. Almost no matter how you play games with this, you're going to have waste directly in proportion to the amount of rewards that are being handed out by the system for doing this mining. And that's very hard to get away from, because you do fundamentally have this, some resources getting consumed in order to move the blockchain forward. And if you don't, then you can't have consensus come out of it. And if you want to get around this, threading the needle on this, what you need to do to avoid it is like, well, let's find some resource that people have already wasted money on, that people have over-provisioned, and make it so that people can utilize that at no additional cost in order to do the mining, or the equivalent of mining operation. And actually, Satoshi, who created Bitcoin, he thought, or at least hoped, that Bitcoin would kind of be like this, that the cost of Bitcoin mining would mostly be the sunk cost of having bought CPUs, and that the cost of electricity would be relatively small by comparison. Now, it hasn't worked out that way at all.
No.
Custom CPUs are like orders of magnitude better at mining than general purpose ones are, or custom chips are orders of magnitude better at mining than general purpose CPUs are. And
now a time when
as soon as there was any custom hardware at all, it obliterated the general
exactly
purpose CPUs.
It kind of eliminated that option.
And then the costs of the electricity are huge as well. So you have these two big sources of centralization around who it is that's manufacturing the hardware and where the cheap power is. And so Bitcoin, a handful of entities could hijack all of Bitcoin if they wanted to.
Right.
And that's not a good thing. So in terms of like, where's the loophole here? How can we, I mean, this is all like loopholes and loopholes. It's right. Like, well, you can't have a secure distributed database, but there's this loophole. If you do this one thing involving computational complexity, it's like, then we want to make it less wasteful. So let's find the loophole and the loophole. It's a lot of threading the needle here.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It turns out there's one resource that kind of works, which is storage capacity, right? Unlike CPUs, storage is all the same thing. Bits are bits. There's no, like, there aren't hard drives that are specialized for different
things.
Right,
a smarter hard drive whatever.
Yeah,
you have space, and on that space you can store bits of data.
Yeah, and that's it. That's all you got.
Right.
If you can figure out a way of some algorithm for proving that you've used space where you can prove the amount of space that you've used, and it doesn't require really much of any electricity to do that, and can do that with very low latency, because you can always do it with high latency because you can regenerate your work, right? Yeah. Then maybe you can do something here. And so this is called proof of space as a general concept, and a few people have worked on it. There was an academic project called Space Mint, which actually the advisor on that is a really important advisor to my company. He's my co-author on our green paper. And there's a lot of just like very technical problems with getting this to work right. You have this problem that you didn't make it cost anything to, you intentionally made it not cost anything to do these lookups. So now you have these just grinding attacks. Someone can go, oh, well, I'm just going to generate 10,000 versions of the history and pick the one that works out best for me. And now you're back to someone with more CPU being able to get ahead. You need something, you need to have a system where not only don't you need CPU to farm it, but you can't use CPU to farm it. And you know, people are clever and CPUs can do a lot of things. So it's a question of how do you stop people from doing that. So
people will always be looking for the way to kind of take advantage of that too.
Yeah. So
So you might have it figured out at one point.
But there are real computer science things you can do. So I came up with this grand scheme of let's mix together proofs of space and proofs of time. Right, because the proof of space can look stuff up at low latency, and the way you show that it was done at low latency is you pair it with a proof of time that comes after. So the combination of those needs to take a while, but it's not using up a lot of electricity. It's kind of like instead of everyone in parallel burning electricity until they come up with a winning lottery ticket, everyone looks up in advance using the proof of space who's going to win in the end.
Right.
And then you sit around waiting for the proof of time to be done on that one.
Sure.
And then that tells you the next block and you move forward from there. So there's a lot of much more subtle technical things there. And the green paper that we just released is really all about this. It's like, how do you take proof of space and make a secure Nakamoto consensus out of it? And the whole thing there is about, well, you're going to have proof of space and add in proofs of time, or verifiable delay functions is the technical term for them. And here are the types of attacks you can have. Here's how you stitch everything together and how you do work difficulty resets and all that kind of stuff. And it makes reference to these other two very mathematical primitives you need at this point, which are the proofs of space and the proofs of time. Mm-hmm. And so our green paper is actually quite accessible and is kind of a fun... It has fun math in it. It's like an accessible thing you can work your way through and really motivates everything. Mm-hmm. Where our other materials are on the proofs of space and time themselves. So we've had our VDFs out for a while now. We just finished our second VDF implementation competition.
Right.
And we gave out over $100,000 in the first one. We're going to give out $100,000 for the second one as well. Not quite announcing the winners of that one yet. But we also, when we released the green paper, we along with it released our proof of space construction. That one's, which is based off some pretty serious computer science research in a paper that was in AsiaCrypt that me and Christoph are co-authors on. And the actual construction has a lot of the details that you need just beyond the core idea really fleshed out in it. And we're doing another implementation competition for that one, which is another $100,000 in prizes. So I encourage everyone to please come look at this, especially mm-hmm. if you're a programmer and you think you're smart. That's open to the public, and the winners will be selected just by whoever's implementation runs best on our benchmark hardware. So really very fair competition. But those two primitives have a lot of like very, very technical stuff hidden behind them. But in the green paper, it just says, well, we'll just assume that those are done. Just treat them as black boxes. And then these other projects on these other things.
Sure. Yeah. So when you take the paradigm of BitTorrent and you take CPU, throwing just a bunch of highly specific and directed CPUs at this particular purpose, and you're talking a lot about what that can do, as far as fairness and and controlling who gets access to the Bitcoin, who's able to mine these in the first place. Then you talk about the proof of space, where it's using hard drive space largely. Is there a point of comparison to be made as far as like amount of space that one system has giving a leg up for that particular system to be able to farm?
So here's how it works. The amount of rewards you get for farming are exactly in proportion to the amount of space you dedicate towards this process.
Okay.
And there's huge quantities of over-provisioned storage capacity in the world. This is like tens of billions of dollars a year spent on storage media.
Totally.
And a large fraction of that is underutilized at any given time. And if only a small fraction of that starts being put towards chia farming, then it will be a money-losing proposition to buy storage media just for the sake of farming off of it. Mm-hmm. And the other good thing about storage is this over-provisioned stuff is spread over a large number of entities. People assume that like the cloud providers have it, and they actually don't. They have a lot of storage, but they're using all of it. Sometimes some of their customers have a fair amount that's under provision, that's underutilized. But the cloud providers don't actually have access to it. And it appears to be there's a lot of different entities that have over-provisioned storage, and it's spread out over a lot of them. And it's not going to become more centralized just because you can farm off of it. Mm-hmm. So it winds up being this nice decentralized thing with entities for whom this is really gravy money and they're not trying to mess with it. And also, because it doesn't really cost you anything to farm, when the work difficulty shuffles around and it becomes – and more space has become allocated to it, and hence everyone is getting less rewards for the amount of space they have, people aren't just going to unplug their stuff because they're now losing money off of it, because they're not. They're making money, just less money than they were before. Right. Where in Bitcoin, when there's a work difficulty adjustment, it becomes unprofitable for some people and right. they just unplug.
Right. What's the point of...
Yeah. Which leads to a tendency towards centralization over time. You get lots of these entities falling off the thing, where in a proof of space system, people have very little reason to unplug. If they're farming, they just keep doing it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. We're going to talk more about this, of course. We do have to thank the sponsor of this episode of Triangulation. Then we'll get back into talking about Chia and maybe kind of the grander ambitions, especially in this day and age. You know, we have President Trump tweeting about cryptocurrency yesterday. I'm sure we're going to talk about that. So it is top of mind on a lot of people's minds, including the President of the United States. But first, let's take a break and thank the sponsor. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Capterra. If you have a business and you're looking for software solutions, this is the way to do it. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. Maybe you're just starting out. Maybe your business is growing. It's time to change the software, or maybe you want to add new software. Whatever your business need is, Capterra is there to help. You can read thousands of real software reviews, find the right software for your business. Just go to capterra.com/triangulation. There you're going to find over 925,000 reviews of products with 30,000 fresh reviews available each month. You can discover everything that you need to make an informed decision, which is the most important part when you're picking a new software solution for your business. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, things like CMS, email marketing, IT service, SEO, workflow management, just to name a few. And once you choose a category, you can filter results by product rating, users, deployment, and features. And then you can compare them side by side, up to four at a time. They'll even show you a list of related categories for further options. And I mean, you dive in there and you take a look at these categories. It runs deep. You're going to find some very specific categories in there. And that's great because maybe you run a very specific type of business. Hey, there's a software solution that matches your business needs. And that's what Capterra is all about. Capterra believes that software makes the world a better place because software can help every organization become a more efficient, effective version of itself. So no matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. You can check out Capterra's free website today at capterra.com/triangulation. That's capterra.com/triangulation. I'll spell that out. CAPTERRA.com/triangulation. Capterra is software selection simplified, and we thank Capterra for their support of Triangulation. So grand view for Chia. Obviously, you know, it's great for, you know, the environment from what we're talking about. Are you looking to make Chia the global currency? Well, are there reasons for someone like President Trump to be like, I'm worried about this crypto stuff, you know, taking over the currency?
There's so many ways I can go with that. But, first, I'll talk about what the president said.
Yeah.
Actually, the president said a lot of things, so I don't want to address everything he said.
Sure.
But there was one thing he said there that was very wrong, and one thing which might be kind of right. So... And a whole bunch of others that are in between, but I won't address those. So the first thing he said that
standard was... Standard operating procedure.
Yeah. So the first thing he said that was just totally wrong, he said Bitcoin is not money. It's like, no, that is absolutely not true at all. Money is
Bitcoin
whatever
is not our money.
Bitcoin, right? No, money is whatever you use as money.
Yeah,
all kinds of totally. Things throughout history, from seashells to reams of tobacco, to all kinds of stuff has been used as money. Money is anything that you use as money, and Bitcoin is absolutely money. Now, a lot of the usage of money of Bitcoin is just speculation, which, okay, sure, you can do that. I'm not excited about speculation in general. I'd really like it to be being used more as money for real commerce happening that way, and building a whole bunch of features for Chia that I think it may make it much better as money. We're building this whole system for supporting smart transactions and smart wallets to really try to get around this problem where Bitcoin kind of feels like you're carrying around giant wads of $100 bills
when you're
transacting in it.
You're talking about Chia Lisp, is that right?
Chia Lisp is the name of the language and environment for it.
Okay.
And in terms of the things that we're enabling, it's features like a multi-sig, so you can say, well, this set of people needs to sign this, or if I lose my keying material, the two of these three people can pull together and I can recover my keying material from them, which is a feature that people very much want. Also things like I want to have this wallet where there's my hot key that I keep, and then there's a separate cold key that's super secure in cold storage. And the rule is, if I want to pull funds out of my wallet, I can. Anytime I try and pull them out, they kind of get escrowed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period, they can be clawed back with this key that's kept in cold storage. So if I get hacked, I can see that there's been an attempt at an unauthorized withdrawal and go claw those funds back. Another thing is having a wallet that can only pay out money to authorized payees. This is a big deal in businesses that are doing things where the person sending out the money is not the person who's in charge, and you don't want to either accidentally send to the wrong person or have a low level person embezzling money. So the targets need to be pre-approved and supporting that. You also want to do net settlement, payment channels, because those allow payments to go through immediately and allow more scaling of the thing as a whole. That's a very important thing that my friends at Lightning Network are working on. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be building a reference implementation of that kind of functionality on top of Chia, and Chia's programming environment is better for those sorts of things. So this is the type of stuff that we're really trying to enable, and it's all very money related. It tells this very coherent story of what is the functionality that you really want out of this. And it leads to actually a pretty decently long list of here's a whole lot of stuff we got to go ahead and implement.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really doing it in a way where the environment is designed as much as possible to be extremely auditable and everything to be very succinct, and it's still very cheap to run a free node, and everyone has full control over exactly what they're doing, and very, very much different from the type of programming environment people are generally used to, and which has caused a whole lot of disasters in distributed apps in the past where they turn out to be buggy and they brick the whole thing. And stuff like that. So this is the opposite general design philosophy of that. It does make it so your standard issue web developer is not going to be able to write these things. Because everything is auditable and confidence inspiring, it kind of forces you to do all the work of auditing it to even get it working in the first place.
Absolutely.
we have a prototype now of Chia Lisp and the environment for it, and we're working on implementing smart transactions. In a few months, we'll have a really fun thing for people to play with that. But that's not there yet; still very much working out. Although a lot of work has been put into that already. Getting back to what the president said, the thing he said that might be right is he said that what Facebook is working on is banking, and regardless of the merits of that specific claim, a lot of what's been going on in cryptocurrencies is just these scams. where, you know, Bitcoin is decentralized, so it doesn't fall under the regulatory regime of banking. And there are good reasons why there's a regulatory regime around banking. If someone is acting as a trusted third party, they need to be trustworthy. And if you're trusting them, there's this obvious business model of them violating that trust and getting something out of it. And there's a long history of banking crises happening every decade or so in the 1800s, absolutely. And if you start loosening up these banking regulations, you don't get technologists coming in building better technology. You get scam artists coming in, because scam artists can deliver a fake product a lot faster than technologists can deliver a real product. Absolutely. And there are a lot more scam artists than technologists in the world.
They're looking for that opportunity.
So the regulatory regime is looking at it and going, this Bitcoin really is kind of decentralized. We can't really mess with it that way. And we do kind of want to let it be. There is some new technology here. We want to see what happens here, right? But a whole lot of people are going, oh, well, I know what I'll do. I'll just claim to have all these other features and get all the benefits of not being regulated as a centralized thing just by claiming I'm decentralized. Bitcoin has given credence to the claim of being decentralized. So I'll just claim it and get away with it. And I'll handle all these, scaling issues just by actually being centralized, but I'll just lie.
And what's to stop them?
So, and there's a lot of just outright scams that are very highly valued right now, that are doing exactly that game. And that's a very bad thing. Mm-hmm. And at some point, some kind of crackdown is going to happen on this.
Right. Now, some are saying, I was reading some articles this morning that are saying this is the biggest bull signal for Bitcoin and crypto, the president actually going, tweeting out. He wasn't necessarily in support of, but the fact that he's acknowledging it.
Well, something the president of all people should know is there's no such thing as bad press.
That's true. That is very, very true. Very good point. So, is that a good sign to some degree for what you're doing with Chia? Does that feel in some ways validating?
Well, I'm not that interested in what is the price of Bitcoin, right? I'm interested in the technology.
Right.
How can I make this actually be a useful technology that's actually enabling valuable, real commerce in the world? Mm-hmm. That is my goal, to make that happen. And that's what I'm really focused on. And these day-to-day fluctuations are noise.
Right. You're really focused on the technology behind it. One of the questions I had was how you convince people to, make some sort of a switch from Bitcoin to Chia. Is that just something that you don't concern yourself with?
No. That's something I very much think about. How is what I'm doing better? Mm-hmm. And the ways what I'm doing is better is it's more decentralized, and the amount of centralization in Bitcoin hasn't caused a huge problem to date, but is legit scary and has caused big problems with adding upgrades to the system in the past. It's greener, which is good, at least from a marketing standpoint.
Very good. Right now, especially.
And also just from a functionality standpoint, it's not there yet. It probably won't be really, really there until sometime after launch, but have a functioning ecosystem of services and functionality around the base underlying thing, which make it much more confidence inspiring than using Bitcoin. So you can do your own custody and it's not terrifying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff. And then we're also going to be, just as a company, directly trying to foster usage of it, create liquidity, possibly loan out Chia to the world, possibly invest in people building in these higher layer support things happening on top of it, really make a functioning ecosystem of the whole thing. So it's really all about having better functionality, better security, and liquidity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mentioned liquidity. That was something that I was kind of focusing a little bit on leading up to today. Mm-hmm. What about the lack of liquidity over time? Bitcoin probably hit a point where mining, you know, like you said, will make no sense at a certain point. That happens, right? So how does the rate of farming reward differ with Chia in that regard?
That's actually kind of a simple question with a simple answer. So in Bitcoin, there's actually this very scary thing where there's just a schedule of mining rewards in Bitcoin. So Satoshi had this great plan, and this is all a big experiment, and they were planning out way in advance and guessing, right? But Bitcoin has a reward schedule. The mining rewards are denominated in Bitcoin because that's the only thing Bitcoin can reward anyone with is the actual tokens themselves. And the amount of those go down exponentially over time. They fall in half every 4 years. In practice, it's a bit less than 4 years, but they're halving over time. So when you're talking, you know, decades in the future, there have already been several halvings, although the price of Bitcoin has gone up a lot. Sure. Although I am glad those halvings have happened because it's lessened the amount of burning of electricity doing nothing that's happened. But as those halvings continue, you get to a point where the rewards are so low that people aren't going to be doing very much investment in mining, which is going to mean that it may become quite practical and profitable for someone to do a reorg attack where they just redo the work of the blockchain over the last whatever amount of time and take away and succeed with a double spend where, you know, you and I trade something. I send you Bitcoin, you send me a wire for dollars, and then I just reorg the Bitcoin blockchain and now I still have the funds that I had sent to you before because I undid that transaction. I put back in a new one that was my own here, and I keep the wire that you sent to me, right? Like that type of attack becomes much, much more practical as these rewards go down. Now, there's a plan here, which is there are transaction fees. When people put a transaction in Bitcoin, they have to pay some amount for that.
Sure.
The amount of those fees are entirely dependent on supply and demand, and they vary massively over the course of the day. What's been happening lately is that there are meaningful transaction fees on the order of up to several dollars during the day. And at night, they go down to nothing. It's essentially free. So if you're willing to wait overnight for your transaction to go through, you don't really have to pay anything for the transaction fee on it. But if, and this is a big if transaction fees go up enough and they're stably up, right? So if you have this cycle where they cost something during the day and then nothing overnight, then you wind up getting into these patterns where the miners just turn off overnight. And then that last like hour or two of the day gets reorged instead of there being mining happening, and then people stop doing it in the first place, and everything goes bad. But if transaction fees go up a lot and get smoothed out over time, so they're kind of even keel and not this massive day-night spike, then this system might continue to function pretty well. Then you get into this other problem, which is that Bitcoin mining pools stop working at that point, because then people can start playing games where you can like, well, that gets complicated. So there are these attempts to make it so that when you have a pool, it's actually the miners rather than the pool who actually make the block. But if all the rewards are coming from transaction fees instead of coming from fixed block rewards, then the pool has no way of seizing any money, because if it just tries to seize all the transaction fees, you have this problem that there are ways that people can kind of pay the individual miner who's actually going to make the block under the table by making an anyone can spend output, and then the miner just pays it to themselves. So a lot of bad things can happen here in the future as these halvings continue over time. So for Chia, we're avoiding this by just not doing that. So in Chia, there are a few halvings because we're preparing for, you know, the value of Chia going up over time.
Sure.
But the rewards do go down, but then they stop. They just like fall in half a few times, like three times, and then they just stop, and it's just these trailing emissions. It's just the exact same amount of rewards until like the end of time. And since there's no like electricity burn and being induced by this, right. I feel fine about having it work this way.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
And now, this is all a decades in the future kind of
right.
issue.
Yes. I like that you have the very, very long view on this. That's important, especially, you know, if this becomes a major global, you know, currency, let's say. Now, and maybe this question kind of ties into this a little bit. I wanted to ask about how Chia plans to stabilize the economy through lending. You guys are going to have a supply of coins pre-farmed and reserved to do this. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
How much is going to be set aside? How will that work?
We're going to have a big chunk, the exact amount TBD, pre-farmed for the whole thing. And the plan, the long-term plan for the company is instead of just selling the tokens over time, which tends to, when you do it that way, it tends to, the tokens tend to go to people who are just holding it. And it tends to depress the price of it because you're diluting the amount that's in circulation, right? We'd rather not depress the price and create better liquidity. And so there's this vague plan, details all TBD, to lend out our pre-farm as an ongoing business model. So making loans in Chia which have to be returned in Chia, but the details of that, we shall see. That's one of several ways we could potentially create liquidity in the system. And right now, the focus really is on building the product and shipping it.
Sure, sure. And a part of that is to get people to understand how it operates and you know, behind the scenes. The green paper is a big part of that. And that only released, well, I guess a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've been really kind of curious and tuned into reception around that. What are you hearing from people?
Well, I've heard from a bunch of people that they actually read it and actually understood it and really liked this. Like, I
will admit I read through it. Uh-huh. There's a whole lot in there that I don't understand, but I was surprised at how much I could make sense of, my non-mathematician mind.
Yeah. It hasn't made a huge media splash, but I think also it's, you know, journalists aren't mathematicians.
Sure.
So they're not one to read a mathy paper and get all excited about it.
Sure.
But it has had a positive reception, and I'm really looking for, you know, credibility in the academic community and among engineers, and also working towards help build up this ecosystem. Once we launch testnet and stuff, hopefully people will understand how they can participate after they've absorbed what it talks about in there.
Yeah, yeah. And just how about with Chia in general? Do you feel like the coverage, the media coverage that you're getting, there's a sense of understanding there? Or I think with crypto, it's easy to think that we understand it, but then you get into the weeds. Like, I know at least for myself, then I get into the weeds. I'm like, I'm amazed at how much I actually don't know about the details behind crypto. You know, how is it being portrayed as a business? Right now,
I think we have, you know, mostly positive coverage.
Yeah.
There are always the haters on Twitter.
that exists. Yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what.
What I'm going for right now is press that can help what we're doing.
Sure.
Right? Like my goals, like my immediate thing, truth be known, what I really want right now is for people to participate in our proof of space competition. That awesome. Is the thing I want people to participate in. And our VDF competition was actually extremely mathy. Mm-hmm. And our proof of space competition is much more programmery, hackery. So I think that's much more accessible to a larger group of people who could get somewhere on that challenge. So I'm hoping to get people interested in that and participating in that is really my goal right now. And that's right. Probably going to be like a dozen or at the most a few dozen people. So I'm trying to find those people. I don't know who they are. Who are going to be really good at that thing. And the whole point of having a competition that's open to the whole world is so that the one person who's really, really good at that, who you could never possibly find any other way, can come volunteer themselves and collect the prize. otherwise.
Yeah, it is kind of a perfect way to do what you're trying to do, right? Instead mm-hmm. of hiring people and then banking on the fact that they're yeah. going to come up with a great idea for you,
well, it only
open
really,
it up for a competition.
Well, I have
everybody
hired,
has ideas, right?
No, I have hired people, well, and I no, am working people who
of course
are working
you've hired,
ideas.
Of course you've hired but people you get, to do certain things.
When you get these things where there's a really objective metric, where you can really nail down, this is what this is doing, and here's how we measure how well this is done.
Right.
In places where you can do that very well, competitions always win.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so then the TWiT network mm-hmm. is kind of a perfect place to get the word out. So many of the people that follow our network are mm-hmm. the people that you're looking to reach. So how can they get involved if they're listening or watching right now and they want
to
get
They can go to
involved?
Our homepage on chia.net. And there's a link, I believe it's at the top of the page, that says you can win $100,000 in prizes.
That's intriguing.
Yeah.
There you go. Yes. All right, cool. We're going to talk about more, and I think the more that we're going to talk about after this break has nothing to do with crypto. Uh-huh. It has to do with these colorful splashes, these toys that we have up here. Puzzles, because Bram, you create puzzles.
Yeah, you invent puzzles.
Super, super interested to talk about that. So let's save that for after the break. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Hiring can be so difficult, but you know that's just because, especially nowadays on the internet, if you're hiring on the internet, there's so many different places you can go to do this. And how do you get the information to the right people? We're talking about finding the needle in the haystack a few minutes ago. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But that's not all. They don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter actually scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and then spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective, in fact, that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first date. ZipRecruiter is awesome. My wife actually owns a business. She runs a business. She's used ZipRecruiter to fill positions in her business, and it's just really easy. That was her thing. She's like, wow, that was simple. Right now, Triangulation listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at our exclusive web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. You can show your support for this show and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. That's ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. And we thank them for their support. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. All right, so puzzle making. You and it's not just like a couple. Like I did some searching online. You got like a whole collection, you know, designed by Bram. And yeah. this is just such a cool kind of, I have to imagine this is a cool way to kind of take the pressure off of what can be a very weighty topic, you know, be it BitTorrent or, you know, recently Chia and crypto networks and all this kind of stuff. This has got to be kind of a nice way to kind of take a breather, or maybe it's not. I've never designed a puzzle before. So what actually goes into creating these?
I just get obsessed sometimes.
That's awesome.
This one here, this is called the Fidgets. This is actually in mass production.
Awesome.
And it does all these
here, you might hold it up for the camera because it's a little hard
to
sign out.
Camera to hold it up for
that's
here.
That's the
that
camera
one.
Right.
Oh, okay.
There
so,
you
so
go.
So this one here, so you can go, it does these moves that are kind of hard to, wait a minute, here, let's describe like that and like there. Yeah. So it does all these different moves. And the goal is to get it to be, the goal here, I think I can actually, I know how to solve it pretty quickly. The goal is to get it to be, out like this, actually. It's white on one side.
You got there and blue far too easily. But I guess when you create a puzzle, it becomes maybe a little bit easier to understand the mechanics of it. Yes.
This type of puzzle, just because you invented it, doesn't mean you know how to solve it.
Sure.
But yeah, this one's in mass production. It's called the Fidgets. You can get it in toy stores and on Amazon and stuff. It costs like $10.
Yeah. There it is.
So right there. I'm very happy about this one.
That's awesome.
Yeah. This one here, you know, a funny thing, I just kind of left my cube on a radiator and it melted, but it still kind of works. So you can so this one here, you can go, like this and like that and then like there and then there and then.
And of course
there.
The goal being to get all the same colors on a single face faces.
Yeah.
But this one has a lot of geometric kind of slanting going on
it didn't actually sit on a radiator. But yeah, no, this one, it took me a long time to figure out the geometry of it.
Yeah, so
I actually didn't know if it would be possible to actually scramble it. I hoped it would before it was made, but I wasn't sure. And it turns out it is. I got it to this state from the starting state, and obviously it's very scrambled. But my good friend who I collaborate with often, Oscar van Deventer, actually made it after I figured out the geometry. This one is not in mass production. I'm hoping it will be someday. If people, I don't know, start a campaign for someone to make that, might get somewhere.
Sure. Well, and I mean, I noticed a number of puzzles, Cast Galaxy, Gear Cube, Gear Shift, Cast Marble, Cast Cake.
Yeah.
I mean,
These are the ones in mass production.
Yeah, those are the ones that I found for sale online. Let alone, I know that you have some concepts that you can go onto like Shapeways and stuff. And
there's like hundreds more.
So I guess what is the process of going towards creating something like this? Is it, I have an idea, you know, take a Rubik's Cube and, you know, throw lots of crazy angles at it and figure out how to make it so that it can actually rotate properly. And out of that comes the puzzle idea? Or like, what is the process there?
Oh man, there's so many different things. I'd say the biggest thing actually is to just see what's out there. Just like try every puzzle other people have made, every idea that they have. Just read through all of them. Don't have this idea that all of your own ideas must be 100% out of whole cloth. See what's out there, mm-hmm. and work with it. And then I just have these ideas in my brain of what I'd like to accomplish and do, and sometimes there's like a way I want something to move, and sometimes there's a mechanical idea, and sometimes there's a puzzle idea that I have. But a funny story, like the Cast Cake that you were talking about, there's a the prototypes were made on my friend's 3D printer, and it is inspired by it's inspired by this other puzzle that's also in the Cast series that actually my friend invented. And I was very concerned with this one because I'm like, hey, I have this puzzle that I think it's like really a four-piece version of your two-piece puzzle. Do you think this is like too similar here? Am I intruding on your turf? And he got back to me like, I have no idea how these two puzzles are related in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, see, if you had just canceled it outright, it never would have happened. But that sounds like a blessing to me.
Yeah,
that's great. That's fantastic. And so then, what from your perspective, like, what do you have to do in order like to be confident enough with a puzzle to say, all right, this is ready for mass production? Like,
I have no idea. No.
Because I mean, like this looks pretty darn ready to me.
Oh, so that one. So this one, much to my surprise, this one resonates with people. Yeah, people think this is really so cool. Hilarious.
Where's the... there we go.
I don't decide what goes into mass production. The people who produce stuff decide what goes into mass production. And they have way better taste than I do about what works. So I just show them everything and ask them, hey, do you think you might want to do this? So I don't know. So they haven't really taken a good hard look at this one yet.
I'm just trying to find the lines that I know I can rotate.
It's actually hard if you get this one in the starting state, it's hard to even figure out how to scramble it. Yeah. Like the first thing is to figure out how to scramble it at all.
Right.
And not just undo what you just did.
I can't get back to square one.
Yeah. and this one also is this one has a bunch of different types of pieces in it. So it would likely be relatively expensive to produce, except people have produced some things that look like they should be extremely expensive lately. So
this is really crazy. This is hurting my brain, actually. So then you must do a lot of puzzles that you haven't created. What does any come to mind as like the most challenging puzzle you've ever, you ever tried to solve?
Oh, well, there's so many different dimensions it, right? So you can have what you don't want for a puzzle is for it to merely be hard.
Yeah.
Like a puzzle can just be like, it can just be like cryptography.
Sure.
That you just have to brute force it for a certain amount of time until you find it, but there's no rhyme or reason. It's just like a jigsaw puzzle, right? Well, the jigsaws have some tricks you can do. But
if it's impossible intrigue, someone's going to give up before they ever get started.
If it's merely just like keep trying all possibilities until you've ground through them and it magically works right at that one point and there's no insight to be had, that's a hard puzzle, but it's not a good puzzle.
Yeah.
And what you really want is something that has some real insight to it. And is really interesting and really teaches it. You want it to be something that most people can figure out eventually and really teaches something, that they feel like they've gained something and become smarter in the process of working through this.
Sure, sure. So then to that end, what's one of your favorite puzzles?
One of my favorite puzzles.
Yeah, one of the ones that you felt particularly accomplished solving
it was worth it. I solved the Rubik's Cube on my own when I was 12 years old.
Okay.
And that took me a while. And I came up with the solution that's in many ways horrible, but it's like interesting, the approach that I took. And so I really should write up what I came up with as a kid solution to the Rubik's Cube.
Sure.
Because it's a different approach. So I think... I think that one's really fun. Yeah. There's something...
It's a classic.
Yeah, there's actually one that I'm really interested in from a mathematical standpoint.
Yeah.
That I actually just sent to a YouTuber who goes by Mythologer, and I'm curious to see what he does with it.
Nice. So if he's going to do something with it, where can people go and check out his feed? What's his YouTube name?
Mythologer. He knows I'm sending him something and he doesn't know what it is yet.
Okay.
We'll see. I want to guilt him into like actually responding to this now.
Yes. Okay. We'll see. And we're putting it out there. So it's a little bit of extra pressure. I'm very curious to see what he can come up with. So, kind of final thoughts here as we're kind of hitting the end of this chat. And thank you, by the way. This has been super fascinating. I love all the everything that's happening in the world of crypto is so fascinating. As much as it can be challenging to understand, it's equally fascinating because it really does feel like the future. And so I appreciate your vision on this. Uh-huh. It's all pretty early, obviously, definitely very early for Chia.
Well, the whole cryptocurrency space is one big experiment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would you say is your grandest vision, your biggest hope for Chia?
Oh, my biggest hope is that people use it. It's like, you know, you want to get people actually doing things with it. If I'm like thinking about how can I, you know, really change the world, it's like, well, my wildest dreams, it's like people just start doing banking in Chia, like people get their paycheck in Chia and then buy things when they go to the store in Chia, and that's all the way through there. That's like the great far off insane hope of everything. But in the much more short term, I'm thinking just having it be used as something that's enabling commerce in some way, that's really making the gears of finance work better than they have been, particularly in places where the finance system is falling apart. There are parts of the world which don't have a terribly functioning local currency, or like don't have any way of really doing banking. You can't send money to and from them there in any reasonable manner right now. Mm-hmm. And even just starting with that, like when it comes to finance, the world of finance is so big because almost everything you do involves finance, exchanging with other people, that even a itty bitty success there can be a huge, huge thing in absolute terms.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you're talking about changing the world, starting with finance is ambitious, that's a pretty good place to start. And you have the potential to really like completely rewrite things. And that's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right now, from a technical standpoint, the grand ambition is we are not starting with an existing code base. Like everything we at Chia are doing is being written from scratch. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to start with an existing code base, but there was so much stuff I wanted to change that it was just way easier to start over from scratch. And that's resulted in there being a lot of work, but we're sure. Well underway with all of that.
Sure. Right on. Well, best of luck with everything with Chia, Bram Cohen. Chia, is it Chia dot, or where should people go online to read up more about Chia?
CHIA.net.
Cool. Bram, thank you so much for coming in. This was a pleasure. It was my honor to get the chance to meet you and talk with you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We do this show every Friday, starting at 11:30 a.m. Pacific, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. You can go to twit.tv/live if you want to watch us record it live. Of course, most people get it because they subscribe to the show as a podcast. You can find all the information that you need to know by going to twit.tv/triangulation or twit.tv/TRI. There you're going to find all the episodes that we've recorded, all 400, well now 406 of them, a whole lot of interviews, including the interview I mentioned earlier with Bram from 2012. Definitely go back in time and check that out as well, and you'll get another hour with Bram. I'm Jason Howell. Thanks to everyone who helps us do this show. Thanks to Jeff. Thanks to Anthony. And thanks to you guys for watching. We'll see you next week on Triangulation. Bye, everybody.